The topic of shared responsibility is a fascinating issue. We've seen the Tosfos on Daf Daled that says that even though someone is liable for damage he does when he's asleep, but there are limits to that. And if somebody is already asleep and a third party comes and puts his item there at risk, so then even if the sleeping guy breaks it, he is liable. And if the other guy himself goes to sleep and gets hurt, that guy is still responsible for the situation because he came and entered into the equation afterwards. So we saw it's a machlokas why that is. This Yerushalmi is generally accepted. It's brought halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. The Rishonim all seem to work off this premise, but the question is why. So we saw that that's a machlokas Tosfos in the Ramban. Tosfos later on in the end of the second parak says that it's because even though you're liable, but there are limits to your liability. And if you're ones gomer, if you really have no clue what's happening, then in that case, you actually are pater. The Ramban in Bava Metzia seems to reject that and says, no, that you're always chayev. It's just that in this case, there's another person to blame it on because the Nizak himself put his objects at risk. So we mentioned that this idea that if the second party is more in trouble here, so we have to figure out why that should be, if that's true. Is it because the second party somehow did more than the first party? Is it because the second party came last, and therefore he's the one who could have stopped it, everything that came before, and therefore he bears all the responsibility, because at the end of the day, literally, it was up to him? Or do we say, as we're seeing some indications that this is the case, that it has to do specifically with the fact that he is the Nizak, and the Nizak has a greater liability. Now we have to figure out why that should be. Why is it that the Nizak plays a outsized role? But it's looking like there is a good basis to say that indeed the Nizak does play an outsized role. And we talked about how Tosfos on our daf seems to be at odds with Tosfos later on and seems to be closer to the Ramban, because Tosfos has the phrase that the second guy changes the situation, Dehem Garmulo, because they're the ones who caused it. So is that like the Ramban, that it's because the Nizak himself was involved? So we saw that some indeed saw this as a steer between the two. The Rav Elchanan understood this Tosfos to be saying, like the Ramban, there is no Ptur Ones. And others didn't go so far. He said maybe Tosfos could still hold as a Ptur Ones, but you don't need to come on to that, because the fact of this extra person being involved was crucial. We mentioned the interesting analysis of the Kovi Yeshua, that it's here to tell us that because the Nizak is involved, that changes the story, and specifically the Nizak. So he mentioned the Nafkamina, that even if it was a shtickle, the responsibility of this first guy, let's say he woke up in the middle and he did see that the Kalim were there, so he could have done something to change the situation. Still, putting a lot, like I said, putting a lot of awareness, but also, you know, the idea of getting up and moving when you're already in bed is also sometimes Herculean task, so the assumption that he could have gotten up and found somewhere to sleep is quite a burden to put on this guy. But in any event, so the Kovi Yeshua says he doesn't think that that's true, that the Nizak's responsibility is the crucial factor here, so even if we could blame it a little bit on the first guy, it's still going to be the Nizak's responsibility. Hi.
Don't we see in the Gemara that in some cases the other guy is actually completely unnecessary?
Would Zoe give me an example? What do you mean, like?
Let's say the guy just baseball bat for the cleat that the cleat already had and it didn't be broken. So in this case, wouldn't it just be on the
Right. So in that case, so if that's true that the second guy is completely unnecessary, so then he is indeed putter.
Yeah. So then.
Yeah.
What?
The second guy is indeed.
Yeah.
Putter,
the second
right.
guy. So then, now, so why are we even addressing the second guy?
Because the second guy is the one who put the kalim there.
Oh, okay.
Right, so when he did that, so then it's his liability. Now, we saw also the question of whether the focus is on the Nizak, so it seems also to be a machlokas rishonim, because does it have to be his own kalim, or could it be anyone who just complicated the situation of putting the kalim there? And that seemed to be a machlokas rishonim, the Tur having the language of kalav, and the Rambam not having that language. That was also significant. So then we gave an example of how some of these issues play out. We also mentioned that even if we say that an adam is mazik ba'ones, still there are limits to what's expected of people. So the Gemara has the idea in the third parak, bring in Haminiach, that you know Adam is born in Bitrachim, that a person who is walking around is not expected to be looking and watching the street and seeing if there's something unusual there. So even Onus has its limits, apparently. And we discussed a few interesting cases, as discussed in the Sfarim of Rabbi Tzvi Spitz. Now, what about somebody who is sitting in a shul and he puts his glasses on the chair next to him and someone else comes and sits on the glasses? And so we discussed there that the person who sat should be, according to this mechaber, the person who sat should be pater, because just like you're not expected to inspect the floor, you're not expected to inspect your chair either. But if you happen to see the glasses and didn't do anything about it and then sat on them, having forgotten, it goes back to being chayiv, because the default is that the Adam HaMazik, even Ba'ones, is chayiv. It's just that there was this premise of Ein Adam Mishmonen and Bedrachim, which would have gotten him off the hook and was negated. Maury?
Perhaps worthwhile to point out that that mentioned him with our general understanding of the Zikin as incumbent upon everyone, as a culture. Because the second that he recognizes and then he has an apprentice, it's not, it becomes on him once he sees they're there.
Right, it comes up, but there's also, but it's serif of two things here, that he could have saved them, but he's also the one who sat on them.
Right, but he's the one that, had he sat on it without seeing it, then there's no question that he would have been
Potter. Right, but what about the other way around? Like, it sounded like what you were getting at is, let's say Jed puts his glasses on the chair, and Sam sees the glasses there, and he says, wow, that's a bad place for glasses, someone's going to sit on that. And then Maury comes and, in his great enthusiasm, jumps in and sits on the chair. So should we say that Sam is liable for that because Sam could have saved things?
Maybe to a certain extent.
Well, to what extent? That's going to be important.
Not to a lucky extent.
Ah, okay. So that's something we have to then figure out. So it seems like it's the two together, right? That it's really because the sitter is the one who noticed it. So it just goes back to his initial liability that basically he's chayav for everything. But there's this exemption of when you're doing normal things and you can't be expected to pay closer attention than that, then you're off the hook. But if you happen to know, then you're on the hook. And he introduced, that author, Bei Spitz, introduced a few other factors. What if it wasn't the Nizak's glasses, but it was a cup, the glass that belongs to the shul? And he's still the one who put it there. So then the sitter, he says, would be Potter, and the one who put the glass there would be Chayev for putting it at risk. And that was consistent with the Nesivis, that when you put something that is protected, it was in the shelf and it was happy and nobody could sit on it, and you took it off the shelf and you put it on the chair, so then you get liability for that. And then another interesting sir. Right, so that's what the Nesivis writes, that's you're considered to be a mazik, which is a very interesting idea, right? That even though the object was not yet damaged when you did that, but he emphasizes, not that everyone would necessarily agree with this, but he emphasizes, not called grumma. That's called mazik biyadayim. Putting it in the place where it's vulnerable is a maisa hezik.
That should do more of it. Just by my enabling it to be susceptible to damage, that is, I'm damaging it. That's the last final nail in the coffin, right?
But why doesn't the guy who...
By my noticing the glasses and then not... The second I notice the glasses and don't do anything about it, isn't that...
Even passively.
Isn't that passively doing the same thing?
Yeah, it is passively, so the emphasis on passively might make a big difference.
Right, but it does suggest that maybe it all fits into the same inion of what Mizzi represents.
But except we don't know that such a person would be chayiv. In the case before, with the three of you. So you're saying Sam should be chayiv here? No offense.
I don't know if he's fully off the hook.
But what does it be?
Chayiv.
Well, but we have to have some meaning to that. So what's he going to be liable for?
He could be chayiv grumma.
He could be called the grumma. The grumma didn't do anything.
Right,
he didn't even do anything.
Fran could be grumma.
Even though he didn't do anything at all. Not even indirectly.
That's
because you're saying it's chayiv b'day shemayim for that,
right? Yeah.
He could have been chayiv, by the way, in hashavas aveda, which is a different issue, presumably, Right? So if you see somebody's stuff as a risk, so then there's a chi of Hashav Seveda. So then he would have had a mitzvah to do something about it. But would that be connected to any kind of chi of Nezikin?
Is that not the salvation we saw?
That would be Losam Radam Reacha. The stipler, I think you're thinking of, that connected the Isser Nezikin.
With the Shabbos Aveda also, right. But the Rav saying Losam Radam Reacha, that would apply here also.
Presumably.
It's my seeing his glasses on the chair would before be the same as me seeing his laptop in the rain.
Maybe, right. But now you're bringing up another interesting question. Because that whole initial discussion about the Isser Lahazik and the Chi of Tashlumin, maybe they're not related. Right, so, okay, Sam, in this case, maybe he was Mavatal Mitzvah Saseh of Hashav Saveda or Lo Samar Al Dam Reacha, but maybe that has nothing at all to do with the Chi of Nezikin. That maybe there's two separate things, and maybe that was something we emphasized possibly the first day, that it could be they're two completely different conversations. What makes you chayev tashlumin, and what is involved when you're mazik somebody's property? So maybe here you would see it's really two different things, that he would be mevatel hashava saveda or lo samod in this case, but maybe that has nothing to do with any kind of liability, even b'day shemayim. So that's also something to figure out. And we mentioned a few other interesting ha'aris from Rabbi Spitz, that if the scenario changes about what people can predict, that should also change things. So he said, let's say it's not a shul where people just come in for mincha, but it's a kolal where people are sitting for hours. And there, people do usually put a cup of tea or their glasses on the seat next to them. And once they're sitting in front of Sfarim for several hours. So maybe then the sitter should know more, that should be more aware that there could be things on the chair. So all of this is very interesting. So let's introduce another scenario into this. Let's say, this is, you can look at this, as also discussed by Rav Yitzchok Zilberstein in the Sefer Chashukei Chemed. Let's say you have somebody who's driving a car, and he's driving irresponsibly, he's driving dangerously, and he gets into an accident, Chalila, and the guy next to him is injured. So whose responsibility is this? Yeah, the passenger in the car gets hurt. Shmuel, you want to...
I thought the case was two separate cars.
Let's say one car. Okay. Right, so you have a guy driving dangerously, and the passenger gets hurt. So you would think, it's the driver. What am I questioning? But I left... Sorry?
Would it depend if the person knew that the guy was going to drive dangerously?
Maybe. Possibly. But I'm leaving out an important detail here. That the passenger was not wearing a seatbelt. And let's assume it was the kind of damage that we can accurately say, had he been wearing a seatbelt, he wouldn't have gotten hurt. Now what? Always a safe answer. But you see here, you have an interesting kind of dynamic, because the driver is the one doing the Maisa Hezek. But the Nizak could have saved himself, and the Nizak didn't by not doing what he was supposed to do. Now here, just to intensify the issue a little bit, one of the points that Rav Zilberstein emphasizes is that the law requires both of them to act more responsibly. And how much does that contribute to what is normal and what is dangerous? So the law, the passenger was doing the wrong thing by not putting on the seatbelt. But the law also requires, at least maybe depends where you are, but at least some places the law requires that the driver make sure that all the people are wearing seatbelts, or at least the front seat, whatever it is. So therefore, maybe the law sees it as his problem. And he goes on to discuss, especially because our culture is that we recognize driving to be an inherently risky undertaking, And the government would not allow anyone to drive unless they've signed off on it, unless they've given him a license. So maybe that makes it his achrayus, especially if the law says that he has to make sure his passengers are wearing seatbelts. So maybe, therefore, it's ki'ilu, the government says, you are obligated, we are only letting you drive, al-manas, that you make your passengers wear seatbelts. So here it's an interesting test case of the fakus that we said before, because those svaras are maybe saying that the key responsibility is in the hands of the driver. Now, let's say for two reasons. One, because he's the one who is acting dangerously, and the law puts the responsibility on him to make sure his passengers all have seatbelts. But Lamaisa, if the passenger had put on his seatbelt, he would have protected himself. And maybe we put disproportionate responsibility on the Nizak. And since the Nizak exposed himself to danger, at the end of the day, it's his fault. What do you think about that? So who's up first? Sam?
It goes back to those like four questions we asked. Mm-hmm. Whether or not, you know, how do we look at it, whether or not the Nizak's the closest line of the chain, or just because he's there, just kind of giving the responsibility. But, that's how we approach those questions.
Right, so it seems like here this is an interesting test case, right? Because you have, you can divide it up. The Nizak, let's say, has two factors that should be mechayev him. One, that if you put the seatbelt on, this whole thing wouldn't happen. So if we say there's one guy who can stop it from happening, he should bear the brunt, even if he's not responsible for other elements. And the ikar of the Nizak's responsibility for himself. Maury, what did you...
I was going to say that it seems like a parallel case to the Havim and the Shita Mikabasis understanding of the Evan case.
Okay. So just so everyone remembers, right? You remember the case, the Gemara says that if somebody is asleep or he wakes up and he has a rock on top of him and he gets up and the rock falls and damages something, so he's chayiv, even though he didn't know. This was an example of Adam Mu'ar La'olam, that he's responsible for the rock falling. And the Shita Mekubetza says, in seeming contradiction to the Rishalmi and Tosfos, that even though he was asleep and there was no rock, and then somebody else came and put the rock there, nonetheless, he's still responsible for the rock damaging. And the Shita Mekubetzos addresses the clear question that it seems to be similar to the case in the Yerushalmi, and yet a different conclusion. Right? You want to take it from there?
We were in synergy and see that the Shita, at least the Havim and the Shita, was that the case is that the Nizak is putting a rock on the person, and then the same person that's putting the rock on him is being hit by the rock.
That if that was the case, it would be more similar to the Ushami.
Right.
Right, but it's not. That's why it's different.
So this sounds like the kid, like that kid that Havamina case. Whereas if Rav Silverstein saying the case is that had the guy been wearing a seatbelt, had the Nizak been wearing a seatbelt, then it would have been avoided. So he is essentially putting the damaging rock on the driver by not wearing a seatbelt. I don't know if, I mean, we reject that Havamina, you know, that he says that that's, it must be that there's a third party in him, but I just thought that it was interesting that this is really, it seems to be, I'm not sure why it wouldn't be exactly the same case.
Exact same case as what?
As the Havamina and the Shita.
What's the Havamina? What are you calling the Havamina?
The Shita thought that it's one guy, like Reuven, putting a rock on Shimon.
Right.
Shimon then standing up and the rock is falling on Reuven.
Right, so if that, you call that the Havamina, saying that's the alternative case, you call that the Havamina.
Case that seemed, that would have gone against the Yerushalmi.
That would have gone with the Yerushalmi.
With the Yerushalmi, yeah.
Right, I just want to make sure we're not getting lost here. I think we were getting a little lost here, so let me clarify what's going on. Right, so the Yerushalmi case, so Tolo is sleeping, and Daniel comes and puts a rock there, he puts his rock there, so, according to the Yerushalmi, Daniel is responsible for what happened. It was rock, it's not a vulnerable. He puts his iPod there, so he's responsible for the loss of his own iPod. according to the Gemara later, if Tolo is asleep and he gets up and he drops a rock off his chest and the rock breaks somebody else's iPod, so Tolo is chayev for that. And even though, as the Gemara makes clear, he didn't know that it was there. And to explain the situation, the Shita Mekubetza says that he was asleep and Daniel Schwartz came and put the rock on his chest. So the question is, what's the difference between that and the Yerushalmi? In both cases, Tolo was sleeping and Daniel comes and puts an item there. So in the Yerushalmi, in our Tosfos, it's Daniel's problem. And in the Gemara later, it's Tolo's problem. So what's the issue? So what's the difference? So Shita Mekubetza says that the difference is that the only reason Tolo was off the hook in our Tosfos is because the Nizak himself played a role. But if it wasn't the Nizak, if it was a third party getting damaged, then we all go back to Adamu Olam, we all go back to the sleeping Tolo. So, says the Shita Mekubetza, what would be more comparable to Ardaf? That if Daniel put his own iPod on, or he put his iPod underneath, he put the rock there and it hit his own iPod, okay, so then we could compare it to the Yerushalmi. But if it's a third party getting damaged, so Shita Mekubetza says, so okay, so the third party whose iPod got smashed by this rock, what did he do? He didn't contribute to the situation. So again, well, there's no havamina though. Yeah, he's saying a different scenario.
That leads to a case of Schwartz putting his own iPod on Tolo.
Right. So that the Liyasuya case. Right.
This case seems to be a case of Schwartz putting his own.
Okay. So now because he's the Nizak, right?
And
could be.
That allows us to, I think.
Right. That's so that
we go back and say the Nizak has a high degree of responsibility.
So that could be. So, and that's, I think, actually how he comes out. If you check again, you can look at it. I think Tyra Zilberstein comes out that with all the cheshbonos and all the heavy guilt that the driver should be feeling, still, at the end of the day, the Nizak played too crucial of a role in his own damage. So, here, let's try to understand that. So, why should the Nizak be so significant here? Why does he play an outsized role? How do you understand that? So, I'll share with you. There's an interesting essay here. As you can see, the Sefer, you all are probably familiar with it.
My favorite one.
Yeah, it's a great Sefer. I'm sure you all recognize it. So this is the Kilos Yaakov, this is the Stipler. This is more chashuv if you don't have more tsanua to not have any words on the cover. But so in Siman Beis here, close to where we are in the Gemara, the beginning of the Sefer, so he talks about this whole notion that somebody should be responsible because they changed a pre-existing situation to expose it to more hezek. And he talks about some Gemaras, which again, we haven't had a chance yet to see on your own, so maybe if we get up to it, we'll look at it together. But I'm going to shoot to the end for a second. Because he talks about, let's say, we know that if somebody uncovers a bor, so that makes him chayev. So you have a covered up hole in the ground and somebody opens it up, so he's now liable. So can you derive from there that everyone who takes away a shmirah is liable for what happens? What do you think? So he discusses some possibilities here. Should we say that bor is different because bor is inherently defined by our Mishnah as a mazik? So you have exposed a mazik. So that's why there is such a concept. But let's say you have an animal that is not muad. So you have a simple, innocent shor that was in a cage, and you opened up the cage. Maybe that's different. Maybe it's not defined as a mazik. I wanted to, sorry? Okay, so I want to, some of the makaris I want to give people more a chance to get to, but it's relevant to that very much. So just to shoot to the end here for a second. So the last paragraph. He talks about the Rambam. The Rambam, which I also put on the makaris, I don't know if you had a chance to see it yet. The Rambam in Hilchos Chiris, where he has a famous line. This is an often quoted line, that Posheya is kemazik. That an act of negligence itself constitutes hezek. So here, in his last paragraph, he comments on this role of the nizik, so I'll just read it to you. It says, Bepshuto nira l'chalik, n'hi demuchach meharambam zal hanal, Shasila Kashmira Mehadavar. It would seem from the words of the Rambam that somebody who removes a state of protection from something, while Yadezah Nifsad Venizak, and because of that the item is lost and is damaged, Khashiv Hamasalik Esashmira Kamaziko. The one who takes away the Shmira should be considered to be a mazik. Mikomakom Im Dover Zeh Lo Huzak Ela Hizik Lacharini. But still, maybe that's only if this item itself gets damaged. But if this item damages something else, maybe not. Lo Nechshav HaMasalik Yisashmir Begeder Osam Mazik. Right? So will we call that an act of Hezek to other things? Even if this is not, let's say, an inherently damaging thing? Or do we just consider it an act of hezek to itself? You've subjected it to danger, but you're not liable for what it does to other things. And he goes on to explain why that should be. Shekol davar bilti shamur, anything that is not protected, nechshav miyad kemufsad mibaylov. It is automatically defined and considered like it has been lost from its owners. The mistama omed lakach, because now that's its inevitable future. She yovdu al yidei inshi delo miley, because now there's a whole dangerous world out there. So once it's exposed, its future is that it's going to be destroyed, whether it's because of disreputable people inshi delo miley, or kitanim viavadim, or whether it's young kids, whatever it is. Once it's out there unprotected, its future is destroyed. But it doesn't have an inevitable future that it's going to hurt someone else. It's not considered to be a mazik until it actually does something. But it's considered to be destroyed. And he ends off, Zayin Peh, he's a pasha. Okay, to see if it's a pasha, but that's how he... That's how he understands. Okay, Shmuley, did you want to say something?
No.
You could.
No.
Okay. Yes. Yes, so what you, there's some responsibility that comes to somebody who undoes a safe situation. Right? You have a situation that's protected, and somebody comes and undoes that. So you are considered to be liable. And the Rambam writes that he has this language, which is a very often quoted Rambam, as a principle, that Pesheya is kemazik, that the one who was negligent, he doesn't necessarily try to break things, but he was negligent, is considered to be the mazik. So it sounds like, from the Rambam's language, like we said with the Nesivis, right, that anybody who removes a item from a protected state is considered to be chayiv for it. So, does that mean that, let's say, I uncage an ox and the ox goes and knocks over a china shop, that I'm chayiv for that? It was somebody else's ox, but I uncaged it. Am I chayav for that? So he says, not so pashut, that we have to distinguish between what I set free. Did that damage something else? Is that a mazdik? Or does it get damaged? It is the nizak item. That if it's the nizak item, if the item that I took out of protection gets damaged, that's my fault. But if the item I took out of protection damages something else, that's not necessarily my fault. Why not? Because we're looking at what is the impact of no protection. It doesn't automatically turn something into a mazik. That doesn't have to be the case. And the fact that somebody who uncovers a boar is chayiv, that's because a boar is by its nature a mazik. It's one of the avos nezikin. So yes, if it's a boar that you exposed, so then you're chayiv for that. But some other item that's not necessarily defined as dangerous, like a short tom, we don't say that that was inevitable. But if the item itself becomes damaged, that is your fault, because that was inevitable. That once something is out there in the street and nothing is protecting it, so then it's a dangerous world. There are inshid o'maili and there are wild kids running around. So ultimately, that's your problem. So that's how he understands the nature of responsibility here. Any comments or questions about that? Yes, sir.
Does it make a difference if, let's say, going back to the seat belt case, mm-hmm. where you do something to kind of make it on you, but that then the person who's doing the damage in itself knows that you are and it takes another step further? So let's say he sees that you're not wearing the seatbelt at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
but still Dafka drives insane.
Dafka drives insane. Sounds like a nice slogan. Dafka don't drive insane. That should be our public safety message. Dafka drive sane. DDS. So that's actually exactly the breakdown. The question is who should bear responsibility? The one who's more involved in making this bad thing happen? Or does a Nizak's self-responsibility always come to the front? So even though the other guy is clearly the one who made this damage happen with his insane driving, but nonetheless, the Nizak, now, so insane that it wouldn't matter if he was wearing a seatbelt, then presumably, it's actually interesting to open that up, you know, because if you say, well, some when you're talking about a person, it gets more complicated. If you're talking about an item, and if you say that as soon as the owner exposed it to danger, then it's considered to be nifsud, so then maybe you should say that even if it would have been destroyed anyway, whether the owner had taken care of it or not, the mazik should still be patur. All right, let's say just in terms of shmirah, let's say somebody who's supposed to, you give somebody something to watch, and the responsible thing to do would be to lock it up in a closet in his house. And instead, he doesn't. He leaves it on his dining room table near the window where everyone can see it. So he's negligent. But then let's say it gets destroyed because the house burns down. So it wouldn't have mattered whether he locked it in the closet or not. But maybe it's considered to be nifsud already, so it doesn't matter whether it would have stopped it or not. So that's something we have to figure out. So, let's do like this. So I will tell you, we'll add a few makaris for tomorrow, and we'll try to get some of these principles hopefully wrapped up. But what I'd like you to look at is there is a Gemara here on Daf Chavav Mibbeis. Say here, because here can mean anything now. On Chavav Mibbeis that discusses the following scenario. So I'd like you to look at this Gemara and look at Tosfos and the Shita Mekubetzes that have an interesting practical comment on it, and the Rambam and the Ravid, and Shulchan Aruch and the Rama.
Rambam,
Ravid, and Shulchan Aruch on this Gemara. That, send you the exact numbers if you can't find it exactly. But essentially here, the Gemara in Chavav Medbeis, which continues with these cases, right, the bottom of the top of the Amud was where we were looking at about the guy who's asleep and the rock is in front of him, rock is on top of him. So we've already made reference also to the idea of, let's say, somebody drops something off a roof and it's considered to be for falling, and it's already been thrown off a roof, and somebody else comes with a baseball bat and smacks it in air. That we've already discussed. What about the following? Let's say somebody tosses something off a roof, but there is a big safety net below. There's a nice soft pillow. So then what? Sorry? Is it considered for falling?
No.
Nope. Because it's going to land on the pillows, right? All right, now here's the interesting part. Let's say, that was just to get you into the conversation. Let's say I throw this off the window into the nice, beautiful, comfy pillow that's underneath. However, Jacob Sachs decides to come and say, oh, cool, pillow. I'll grab that. And he removes the pillow just as the item reaches that destination, now smashing into hundreds of pieces. What's the story there? Ooh, okay. So let's see. Well, some other parties involved here, but we'll have to see exactly what the story is there. And we want to know two things. We want to know, am I chayiv? We want to know, is Jacob chayiv? Or, let's tweak it again. Let's say, in a spectacular display of acrobatics, or of some other skill, so I drop something out the window onto a pile of pillows, and then I very speedily run down the stairs, jump outside, and myself remove the pillows before the item hits the ground. Even more impressive than the guy who takes the tablecloth off without disturbing the candlesticks and the rest of the table. So I myself, I threw it when there were pillows underneath, and I then removed the pillows before it hit, allowing it to smash. What do you think about that? So, God willing, we will discuss all of those situations tomorrow and see how this affects our larger picture. All right, who do you want to dive in for us? Okay, Jed, you stood up first. So,